Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Heidi Stevens, how you doing, Heidi?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on over here today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's such a short little trip.
Normally I have like a nice commercial break to say hello and set you up, but here on the stream, we don't got any commercials here for a little bit later, so we just welcome you right into the program.
Let's get to it.
How's your Monday going? I know you watched the Oscars because I read your column today, which we'll get to, about it being a more feminist Oscars.
More feminist, which then passed Oscars, which is a low bar.
When you say it's more feminist, is it just that it's more representative of, that represents women more in more categories?
More women won. The host didn't open with, "We saw your boobs." That was big.
That was your first checklist?
That was my first checklist.
Yeah, the first one, it's like, is there a boob joke in
it? A documentary about periods won an Oscar. The commercials, right? That Nike commercial that Serena Williams
narrated.
Oh, the
athletic. Yeah, I didn't watch it live, but I watched it this morning. It was wonderful.
It was wonderful. The Charlize Theron, Budweiser commercial, all of it. It just felt like, I don't know if it set out to be, you know, the more feminist Oscars. It just felt to me like not hostile to women in a way that in past years when I've been watching it, I've spent at least 40% of the time rolling my eyes, and I didn't this time. I didn't feel like the women were there as decorations or foils for the dudes. Mm-hmm. It felt like they were there to be honored and entertained and in on the action, and that felt different than years past to me.
Do you think that's something that, I guess we won't know until the next couple of years, but do you think we've seen a permanent shift, not only in the Oscars, but all these award shows, or how companies represent themselves? Is this a permanent shift, or is this a temporary action to Me Too, or have we gone past where we can't go back again?
I think it's permanent. God, it's hard for me to imagine Seth MacFarlane singing "We Saw Your Boobs" ever again. I mean, it's almost hard to imagine that that was only 6 years ago, mm-hmm. and that they panned to the audience and you saw the sort of appalled, shocked faces of the women whose names were, you know, sung aloud from stage. And I just doubt we're going to go back there. Mm-hmm. I doubt it. It feels too much like women have claimed their power in a way that they're not going to give up.
Right. And you mentioned the gaining the power. It's obviously better representation and winning, but I think corporate sponsor, I mean, say what you will about corporations, they're going to go where the money tells them to go.
Well, exactly.
But that means that the big change has been made. If they know that people are voting with their pocketbooks, how they believe and what they believe in, then that might be the ultimate sign that things have changed.
Right. I know. And this is a conversation Michael and I have a lot. My husband, mm-hmm. who's a film critic at the Tribune. You know, it seems to me like this isn't all altruistic by any means, but when Hollywood does make movies, or when, you know, studios make TV shows that look more like all of America, mm-hmm. they do great. Like, look at how Black Panther did at the box office. Look at how Crazy Rich Asians did at the box office. Girls Trip did at the box office. These movies do fantastic. It's not like, well, you know, to be fair, we'll put out a cute little picture that, you know, appeals to some non-white straight folks. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, put out a picture that, you know, a whole bunch of America can relate to, and guess what? They show up.
Yeah, we talk about this on the Business Lunch all the time, that companies that force themselves to be more diverse, to have more women, more African Americans, more gay people on their boards, they sort of realize, what the heck were we doing for so long?
This
we're making so much more money.
This is good business, right.
So did you find yourself enjoying the show?
I did enjoy it. Yeah, I did. And I didn't see a lot of the movies, and I was disappointed that Glenn Close didn't win because I loved The Wife, mm-hmm. and I love her. But I enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought that Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler and Tina Fey were great in the beginning, and I didn't miss the host. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a good one.
You're listening to the John Williams Show on WGNRadio.com, the stream. John Hansen filling in until 3 o'clock. I think Roe's coming in to do the stream as well until he comes on post-White Sox baseball. Try and get more details on that in a bit. We're all a little up in the air here today because it's a first day White Sox baseball game during the weekday. So I had to move studios a couple times. I just forgot to turn on your microphone, all these sorts of things.
That did sound muffled.
Yes. So I asked this question I work on WCIU on the Jam, the morning show. And after the R. Kelly situation and certainly after the Jussie Smollett arrest and all that happening almost simultaneously, back-to-back days or so, you know, does Chicago's reputation take a hit? And I watched the press conference, which I thought Superintendent Johnson did a very good job, for the most part, talking through that. And actually, I got to hand it to the police. I think, for the most part, I think everything's been handled really quite well. I think that it was a real difficult line to toe. But then I wonder, should we be embarrassed as Chicagoan, or is this a moment to be proud of how our city has handled it so far?
God, I just don't see how it reflects on Chicago one way or the other, certainly not negatively. I was a little surprised to hear him, Superintendent Johnson, describe the Jussie Smollett saga as dragging Chicago's reputation through the mud, because I think Chicago really comported itself quite well. I think, you know, I was hearing both sides. I was hearing people who believed him from the beginning, which, fine, absolutely no shame in believing someone who says they've been assaulted. I would argue that should be our default position,
right,
is to believe people who say they've been assaulted. I was hearing people right off the bat saying they didn't believe him. It smelled like a hoax. Also no shame in that. There's nothing wrong with looking around your city and thinking some of that stuff doesn't line up with the reality you know.
Mm-hmm.
No shame in that. So, you know, there I see a city that has a big heart and also kind of a healthy dose of skepticism, right? I think that the media, the Chicago-based media, handled the story exactly the way it should have.
I agree.
It wasn't Chicago reporters having to delete their tweets. It was celebrities. It was politicians. It was cable news hosts. You didn't see Chicago reporters, you know, leaving out the word allegedly or, you know, tweeting their real feelings.
There was
about
a lot of journalism 101 going on with the journalists.
Exactly. And in fact, I was flipping through a People this weekend that had published, you know, before last week. And so when, you know, more national outlets were going with, like, his story is, you know, spun gold and, and absolutely 100% rock solid. And yeah, they really did report it like this happened to a guy and, you know, let's all wring our hands. And Chicago news reporters did not.
Right.
I mean, it was a crime that was reported and police investigated it. And of course you cover that. Of course you cover
that. Right. How do you not? Yeah.
You don't not cover that, especially when the person reporting the crime is a star.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Chicago journalists handled themselves beautifully. I thought that the national people could have taken a cue from Chicago. So I don't think that reputation was bruised at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the cops, as you said, handled it fine. I mean, less than a month after the allegations, they appear to have cracked this thing wide open.
Right.
I'm
glad that it, I don't want to say I'm glad it took that long, but I'm glad that it wasn't, you know, we started hearing, you know, it took the appropriate amount of time to go through an investigation. And through that investigation, it wasn't like day three they were saying, well, we don't know. They said, we are still treating him as the victim. Now, whether there, I mean, of course, there were murmurs, and they said right from the beginning they had concerns about this. And I liked what Superintendent Johnson had to say, that until hour 47, he kept on saying that during the press conference, we treated him as a victim officially. And I think that you had to follow the book on that. And then they did that. I think we should be proud of that.
Totally agree. They had some really murky evidence that they tracked down. They had, it sounds like, maybe some fairly obvious evidence if he truly did write a personal check to one of the guys. Although now, I guess he's saying that that was for personal training.
For training, yeah, or something.
But
not the only piece of evidence they have on this thing.
Yeah, and I didn't see Superintendent Johnson on Good Morning America this morning, but I guess he was on there.
Yeah, he was on GMA this morning.
Which seems a little odd to me.
I didn't know why that was. I don't know if he kind of emerged from this as a star of this whole thing, as the way he composed himself, because he had some, I give him credit, he had some real moments. He said the words, I'm pissed off.
Right.
We're pissed off. I liked seeing that. I think that that reflected how we all feel about the situation. It gave a very human touch while still staying professional about it.
I totally agree. And I think, like, often I'm inclined to say, like, well, if something like this happened in New York, would people be saying that New York's reputation was dragged through the mud? Or if this happened in LA, would people be saying LA's reputation was dragged through mud? In both cases, no. But at the same time, I think one of the beautiful things about Chicago is that it is a big, you know, cosmopolitan, world-class city, but it feels like a small town in a way that those two cities don't. And so I can see people's inclination to take this a little personally, mm-hmm. in the way that a big New York, a big LA might not. I just don't think it reflects badly on us. I think that it, you know, in every way, from citizens to cops to journalists, Chicago did fine.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago did fine in this. And it's, you know, people sometimes don't tell the truth, and sometimes they weave Chicago into their story.
Right.
In the column I wrote about it, I mentioned that tourist from Minnesota a couple of years ago.
Oh, right.
Made up a story about getting robbed at knife point on
Lower Columbus.
Which
I don't even remember that.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I mean, if Jussie Smollett wasn't famous, we probably wouldn't remember this either. But the point was, you know, they lied and said that they were on Lower Columbus and three guys robbed them at knife point and took their Louis Vuitton luggage and cash, and then later told cops they made the whole thing up. They were
just
trying to have some fun.
Right.
Right. I don't know. Did that reflect badly on Chicago? I don't think it did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what really made this it's a politicized issue, the Jussie Smollett thing, is the MAGA hat thing.
Totally.
And maybe rightfully so. I did actually find myself finding some sympathy. Maybe sympathy is not the right word. But I got where some conservatives, some Trump supporters, felt that this was an attack against them in many ways. Because it was. Yeah. I mean, he did it. I guess I can understand that.
Yeah, unfairly maligned, for sure.
Right. I think there's a lot of cases where these things are true, and these things do happen, and I think that the hate crimes are on the rise.
Yep.
It's been documented. Hate crimes against LGBT people are being reported at a rate never reported before. The most common hate crime of all is a racially motivated one. These things are happening. But that MAGA thing, I think, is what part of the reason that it has become so politicized. Also because everything is so politicized now.
Right.
And
right.
We can't get away from anything being white. So I honestly think it's no shock that a lot of the Fox News reporters coming at it saying, look at how this dragged Chicago through the mud, or that maybe it damaged reputation, or I can't believe they're reporters. It's only because the MAGA thing was introduced in this.
Yeah, I agree. One of the best takes I read on this was just a tweet, actually, and it said, maybe you saw something similar, that, you know, the story about the boy who cried wolf, you know, the lesson there, the takeaway there is that, you know, he told a believable story and then it turned out not to be true. The lesson there wasn't that there's no such thing as wolves.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And I think that's similar here. It's not that hate crimes don't happen. It's just that this one did not.
Right. I saw an interesting cartoon where it had a wall written down. I don't know if it was Stan. I don't know who wrote, who drew it. That there was real hate crime written over and over again on this wall. And then there was one fake hate crime in red instead of the black ink. And it was I think it was President Trump being, lampooned, pointing to that scene. See, I told you.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. I wanted to just, before we let you go, Heidi, since you did walk all the way on over here.
That's right.
You have written columns in the past that I love about, you really take it upon yourself, and I feel like you are justified in doing this, to kind of defend the city.
I do.
I feel like you're okay in doing that because you don't hide over the BS and the issues in the city. You do face those head on, and you welcome those, but those are a part of who we are as a city. Do you feel like yourself as a Chicago defender?
I totally feel, I do. And I try not to paper over our problems, but I will say that in my life as a parent and a neighbor and a volunteer and a journalist, especially, I just meet people every day who are working so hard to make the city better and improve all of our problems and, you know, get our flaws a little less violent and deadly and awful. And, you know, that makes me love this place even more. And it's human, right? We're a place full of humans, and humans aren't perfect, and the city's not perfect, but I love it, and I'll defend it till the day I die.
Obviously, I think one of my favorite things on your social media account, and unfortunately though, but you get the most interesting mail.
Interesting is exactly the word I would use. Yeah.
So What does that make you feel like? Is there a part of you? I mean, I think anyone could read some mail, and no matter what, you get hurt by some of that. And so, or maybe, I don't know if you do, but like, we read our text lines and we read what people say of us, whether it's on radio or on TV.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it can sting at certain moments. Or do you wear it as a badge of pride, knowing that you've said something that is going to at least provoke thought and that you are making people at least feel in some way riled up about something? I don't know.
Yeah. It depends on the tenor of the note. I mean, every email or text or tweet that doesn't agree with me doesn't depress me. Often it's like, okay, well, then let's talk about that. But if it's just name calling and threats, that does make me a little depressed, more so because it makes me feel like I'm walking around in a world and my kids are walking around in a world where we turn to threats and violence when we disagree with people, which depresses me more than, you know, it's not so much personal. It's just like, wish that's not how we related to one another. But if it's just, I read this thing that you wrote. I hated it. I disagree. Here's why. Like, I kind of welcome that. I mean, I try not to really, unless it's extreme, I try not to block people on Twitter. I try not to unfriend people on Facebook. I want to have a dialogue with people who aren't already, you know, lined up exactly with everything I believe. I want to learn from them. I want to hope that there's a chance they'll learn a little from me. I mean, it just, like, what hope is there if we can't even dialogue with people who we don't agree with, right?
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, Heidi, anything fascinating you've got coming up in that you can tease ahead to any columns in the next couple of days?
So, yeah, I am about to profile Northwestern Memorial Hospital's first African-American female transplant surgeon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, who's so cool. And she...
So cool.
Yeah, and she talks about just the power of... patients having someone in the room who looks like they do, patients of color, and especially when you're telling someone that they need to have like an organ removed and, you know, a new one put in them. And so she just had really amazing things to say about medicine and race and Chicago. And so I'm excited about that story.
I can't wait to read it. Every time I hear the first woman of color, the first color person of color in this role, I always think it's 2019.
2019.
How are we still doing this?
I know.
I went through that a lot in the 2018 midterm elections with Stacey Abrams in Georgia, the first African-American woman major candidate for governor in the history of the United States.
I know.
It's
governors
crazy.
Are super white and male. I'm
right.
Not sure why.
Yeah. Heidi, I have a few guesses. Heidi, thank you so much for joining us here today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.